Bound.
Hi, I'm Tara.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
Welcome back to our podcast, Books and Beyond with Bound, a podcast where we discuss the creative processes of India's best authors. Well, as you know, it's our quarantine edition, and on this episode, we have a very special guest. She's a friend and she's a very, very talented singer, songwriter, and now an author, Anmol Malik. Her book, Three Impossible Wishes, was unlike anything we'd read before. And on this episode, we find out why.
Yeah, Tara, I don't usually read chick lit. Like, you know, I prefer reading literary romances. But Anmol's book is a genre-bending book. And, you know, our listeners will learn how on this episode. Like, I learned so much from her writing journey, especially, like, how much she struggled to get her debut published. It's commendable.
Yes, I was with her through that journey. And I saw it firsthand. But on this episode, I found out things that even I didn't know about her. So I'm sure our listeners will get many tips about how to write rom-com and where inspiration can come from. In Anmol's case, it can even come from sci-fi.
Yeah, and creativity cannot be restricted to a single form. So let's dive in. Hi, everyone. So here's Anmol Malik. Let's start by talking about her book, Three Impossible Wishes, which is just published by HarperCollins India.
It's a campus love story, but it's a campus love story like no other. It's set in a college in UK, and it follows the character Arya, who is really quirky, fun, super relatable. And it's a love story, and you'll find out more, but the names you need to know right now are Delhi Boy Sahil and Russian Vladimir. So welcome, Anmol.
Wow, you just described my book way better than I could have spoken about it. Thank you so much, Tara.
Welcome, Anmol. Really excited to talk to you. I've heard so much about you from Tara. What we really love at Bound, Anmol, is getting to talk to writers like you. Basically, writers who really, you know, bend the genres. And I don't usually read chick lit. You know, there's this kind of mind block that I have. But then, you know, when Tara told me about your book and I actually read it, wow, I was mind blown, Anmol. I'm very intrigued to know, Anmol, even as a writer myself, you know, how did you come up with that voice of Arya? You know, it's really unique, you know, the plot, the language, the tone. So can you tell us a little bit about how that came about?
Sure, absolutely. You know, when we use the word chick lit, though, I feel it kind of undermines a whole genre whenever I'm writing. Rom-coms make me very happy. And my background is mostly film. So the kind of writing I kind of grew up on or got inspired by was actually screenwriting. Coming to the voice of Arya, one of my favorite books of all time and the one I keep falling back on again and again is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. And he's got such a strong voice, which I absolutely love. And I think that has influenced me a great deal and kind of found its way in Arya Mardhani. Very strange comparison, I know, because that's sci-fi. But I don't know, maybe mixing the two genres kind of worked for Three Impossible Wishes.
So yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Anmol. You know, inspiration can come from anywhere. And even what you said about chick lit, you know, I don't like that term personally, because it sort of does, you know, as you said, undermine, you know, a whole genre. And what you're trying to do is so much more than chick lit. So Anmol, you know, when you were writing your book, you know, what did you think about, you know, the genre that it fits into?
The kind of books that I kind of grew up on when we were in middle school and we kind of wanted to pass the time, we read the Shopaholic series and the Princess Diaries. I had somehow even read Bridget Jones's Diary at that age. I don't know how I had the access to it. But these books basically settled somewhere deep in my mind, and they kind of helped me feel a little happy and a little snarky and a little witty. And I think they very accurately portrayed a certain lifestyle, whether it was Bridget Jones living her job out at a publishing house, whether it was Mia trying to be a princess. I suddenly got to see cities and worlds and how people lived and things that I wouldn't have normally had the access to living in Mumbai. And I think somewhere movies or rom-coms or books that are in that genre do a very good job of portraying the way people live and the things they do. It's very natural. It's very easily accessible. And I think with this particular book, Three Impossible Wishes, what I was trying to show was the plight of international students. And not just international students, people who basically leave their cities or their countries to work in a new place that's not easy, you know, trying to settle down somewhere that is not your place, not your home. Your friends have been left far behind. Doing that is not easy. And on the surface, it might look very glamorous, but it's not actually very glamorous, because being an international student means you have language barriers, money barriers, food, jet lag. You've got 1,000 other problems to deal with. And that's the space that this book begins from. Though it's a light book, it covers a lot of deeper issues, because this book is set in the same year as the 2611 terrorist attacks in Bombay. It's set in the same year when gang wars were on the rise in the UK. Now imagine being a person who's completely new to this country and dealing with all this. It deals with professors and a little hint of racism, how different cultures come together. And all of this is kind of tied together with a really comical romance. So really, what is not to love about a rom-com? A rom-com just lightly touches upon deeper issues and packages it neatly, almost like a Christmas present. And I think that's why I get attracted to the genre so much.
No, that was a really insightful answer, Anmol. And especially, I was really taken back to my time when I moved to Bangalore to study, you know, and I could really relate to Arya. And, you know, I wanted to just, you know, call you up and ask you, Anmol, how did you do this? It's really good.
You know, like I studied in New York. So like, again, like the, you know, the whole international student and be on your best behavior so that you don't get deported. Because that's like the biggest nightmare.
The question I get asked very often is, how similar are you to Arya? The thing is, not very. Arya is not based on me. Arya is actually based on a lot of people I've met who think very little of themselves. And I just don't know why that is, because within themselves, they hide so many possibilities, but they just don't think they're good enough. And Arya is the embodiment of that. That is the reason I was inspired to write her as a protagonist, because you see her journey through the book as someone who thinks so little of herself and who she eventually becomes and starts believing in herself. That's a very important journey for her.
And it really is sort of a coming of age novel in that way, which makes it all the more compelling. So, I mean, I just love, you know, everything that you merged into this book.
When I was writing it in complete isolation. I swear, I didn't think it would ever get picked up. It would ever get published. I was solely writing this for me because I wanted to make myself smile. Because as a debut author, you usually don't know where to go. I had the biggest problem because I didn't understand anything about this space. I still don't. And it's very scary kind of navigating it completely on your own. And when I showed Tara this manuscript, she's the one who injected so much belief in me and said, Anmol, this is really good. Please continue writing this. Because of that belief, I could complete this manuscript, the first draft, within 3 months, which is ridiculous.
And the thing is that, you know, like this genre is, I don't think, like I've told Anmol this before, but what she's done, I think nobody else in India is really doing. You mean you can learn so much from the craft just by reading this book. And it's really elevated this whole genre in India to another level. So you have writers like this in the West, you know, like, as you said, Meg Cabot and, you know, all of these people that we really love, you know, the rom-coms that we love to read. But there's no real writer like this in India. So I really think, Anmol, you have a space here to do something amazing.
Because, you know, your scenes really come alive. And one scene I still remember, Anmol, when Arya really bumps her head into a door. I think, oh God, I laughed out loud so badly. Because, you know, I feel you have brought out this awkwardness of the character really well. It really reflects in their writing. So I really like that about your book, Anmol.
Because you told me about Arya's awkwardness. She's basically the sort of girl who gets out of problems by creating more problems. That's just the kind of girl Arya is. She gets her foot stuck in vending machines. She gets caught in gang wars. There's something about her that just attracts all the problems. And I think that's what makes her entertaining.
Yeah, and definitely it's so relatable, because I think the awkward moments in my life far outweigh, you know, any normal or general moments. Because I mean, I am always in an awkward situation, you know. But coming back to, like, I mean, you are such a creative person, Anmol. So, you know, before I even knew you were a writer, I knew you as a singer. So what is your routine like? Because I know that you dabble in so many different creative forms.
I've always maintained this, which is I feel there's a certain storytelling to music and there's a certain rhythm to writing. So in a way, stories and music for me go hand in hand. I always tend to write when everybody's asleep. And for me, that's very early in the morning. So I'm usually up by 4:35, like a total psycho. And I'm just writing away, because I feel at 4:30 or at 5 a.m., I'm not completely awake, which means there is no filter. Because when you're not holding yourself back, suddenly you can just hear yourself think.
Wow. I mean, I am also a night person, Anmol, so I could, really relate to that. But also what I am intrigued to know is, Anmol, how do you then, make it coherent for a story? You know, I'm sure that the thoughts would be jumbled at that point. So how do you make sense of it all?
Surprisingly, they're not that jumbled. But I find that by the afternoon, maybe by 3 or 4 p.m., I'm completely wide awake. I have done everything that I need to do for the day, everything on the to-do list. When I'm wide awake and I feel like I can judge properly what I have splattered out on the paper is when I sit and start molding it. Then all the filters come into play. Is something good? Is something bad? Is it making sense? But I think by definition, being a writer means that you hate everything you write. I don't know why that is. But I need to work on something, which is I need to start having more belief in what I'm writing, because I just look at what I've written and go, this is not going to work. So I think writers need friends, and which is very difficult in our profession because writing is very isolating. So it's a bit, it needs to balance itself out a little.
So Anmol, I can totally relate when you say that writing is isolating. And I lived in Bahrain, which is literally an island for many years. And I felt completely isolated from the, literary community. But I always wanted to be a part of it. You know, I stalked writers, following their work from magazines, knowing about their work more. And that is how I built the, my small community. And they were the ones, I mean, they're still there for me, like we exchange stories, poems, and, we basically are beta readers for each other. And that is everything to me, it's like family.
So Anmol, I mean, like, it's so exciting to see your debut book out and have it do so well. But, it's also, difficult to pick what you want, because I'm sure you have so many stories, and I know that you have so many stories. So how did you decide, this is the idea that I'm going to go with, and I'm going to execute on this idea for my first book?
Honestly, when I started writing this book, like I said before, I didn't think it was going to be published. I didn't think I was going to show it to anyone. I wrote it because I wanted to make myself smile, and because I wanted to create this fictional universe of the University of Wesley. I personally think I have a lot of stories to say in this university itself, and which is why the book does spend a bit of time building the actual university as well. There are characters in this book who, in my head, are already part of other stories, and I want to kind of interconnect them if I ever get the chance to write more. I think it would be a very interesting space to explore. And I personally believe that every piece of art has its own destiny. You can't decide where that piece of art is going to take itself. So for me, when this book got completed, I didn't know that it would lead me to Bound India. I didn't know that it would eventually lead me to Writer's Side, and it would eventually get picked up by HarperCollins. And finally, I'd be sitting here and speaking on this podcast. So it's been the journey of three impossible wishes. It has nothing to do with me. And there is something that I would like to say. So, I feel I have a lot to learn when it comes to writing. I keep trying to learn as much as I can. But there is one piece of advice that has never left my head, which is what Roald Dahl said. He said that when you begin a piece of work, don't start something new until you complete what you've started. And that is something that has held me in good stead till today. And if I ever had to give advice, this is the advice I would share.
Thank you so much for that, Anmol. I really liked your process, Anmol. And please keep doing that. Don't let the pressure of getting published get to you. Yeah, and Anmol, this is something that I really wanted to ask you when I was reading your book, because, as a female writer, I've noticed that I'm very conscious while creating male characters. You know, they don't really come naturally to me. And I always wonder, am I doing it right? Can you tell us, what was the inspiration behind these characters, and, how did the process go up?
Michelle, that's a really good question, because it's a question I ask myself too when I'm writing. I always want to create authentic male characters, and there's always a little hint of doubt. But Vladimir was born from a space which was the ideal man. For me, like, if a boy like Vladimir existed in real life, I would do everything to try and be with him, because he just seems so unreal. So the kind of love stories that I'm attracted to aren't the kind where you remember, birthdays and Valentine's Day and cheesy gifts. That's not the kind of love story that I kind of end up watching. The stuff I like is where two people bring out the best versions of each other. Vladimir brings out the best in Arya. She needs him. And Arya brings out the best in Vladimir. They balance each other out. And the male characters are kind of, you know, drawn from the male characters I grew up watching, which was Raj Malhotra or Aditya Kashyap, or even all the characters that Hugh Grant has ever played. So all these little mishmash of these characters have found their way into this book.
There's a lot of criticism also against the rom-com genre, especially in movies, you know, maybe because like they maybe, you know, they all follow a certain trope, or in the end, you know, they always always have to fall in love, or maybe, you know, the woman who is supposed to be nerdy looks a certain way. So what do you think about all of that, you know, the criticism and all of that?
The reason I realized I fell in love with this genre was surprisingly because of one movie and one movie alone, which was 500 Days of Summer. Up till that point, I really personally didn't think I was into rom-coms. And I think I judged them a bit too harshly. Then I watched 500 Days of Summer, where the opening line of the movie is, "You should be warned that this is not a love story." It's an entire rom-com which ends with the boy not getting the girl. That's when I realized rom-coms can just tell you so much. You can take a genre where you know what's going to happen next and break all the rules. I like the way these movies are packaged. I like the way these books are packaged. They are happy. They are warm. They make you feel good. And in today's very strange time where you don't know what's happening next, what's so wrong about being happy or wanting to feel a little happiness?
I totally agree with you, Anmol, because like I've been a fan of rom-coms since I was a kid. I mean, rom-coms are my favorite genre, you know, to watch as movies. And I agree. I mean, it's just something lighthearted. And, you know, everything doesn't have to be serious. Everything doesn't have to be heavy to be serious. You can have, you know, interesting themes. You can have books and movies that make you think, but are also lighthearted and warm and funny. And that's what your book also does.
Yeah. I think I'm attracted to love stories. Or just that emotion of love, because it's the most raw and primal thing that a human being can feel. And it makes you do insane things. It makes you protective. It makes you strong. It makes you so many things. And I think and it's not just love between a man and a woman. It's love that manifests in different ways. It could be even a friendship. So I don't think it's just the happy-go-lucky rom-com that attracts me. It's the deeper emotion of it that always attracts me to a story.
So Anmol, and one more thing that you've mentioned really stayed with me is that, you know, what's wrong in being happy? I think many literary writers need to hear that, because they often think that you need to have experienced something traumatic, something, you know, a tragedy. And unless you face that pain, you won't be able to write something which is called good literature. But I think you've really given us a very different insight into that. So Anmol, you know, since we are talking about rom-coms, I'm really curious as to what is your favorite meet-cute in a story. And, you know, honestly, I did not know of this term before. Only when I read your book, I Googled it and, you know, I was discussing with Tara, but I really didn't know of it before. So I want to know which is your favorite meet-cute.
And what is a meet-cute for our listeners?
A meet-cute is something as simple as Jab We Met, this boy who's almost suicidal. He's on the train going nowhere. And there's this girl who's got a whole life ahead of her because she's run away from home to get married to the love of her life. So this happy girl and this very unhappy boy are on the same train in the same compartment. And that's their meet cute. He's annoyed with her and she's just full of life. So it's usually two people meeting. One person has what the other doesn't. Two pieces of the same puzzle. That's a meet cute.
That's very interesting. And Anmol, you know, I see a lot of influence of films in, you know, just in the way you're speaking, you know, and you have such an extensive knowledge. And, you know, you also worked as a script doctor, which is a very different, you know, situation from the world of publishing and all of those things. But obviously it does deal with stories. So how did your experience as a script doctor working on scripts day and night, and did it actually come handy when it came to writing your own story and your own book?
I find when I pick books up even to read, I always pick those books that have a story, in the sense stories which have a lot of plot points. So when you're writing a script, right, you have plot points which we call turning points. It's that thing in the story that constantly keeps your plot moving, keeps it turning. And I think being a script doctor definitely helped, because it helped keep my own story sharp. So all these plot points come at very strategic moments. It's like a rhythm. You can't break the rhythm at any point of time. Because if you do, you'll sense the lag as a reader. I think that really helped me greatly when I was writing my story, because that's where the script doctoring bit of it kind of kicked in. What scenes make sense? I think I've got this thing of not calling chapters chapters. I still call them scenes for some reason. And I think because my background is screenplay, I put a lot of emphasis on dialogues of a character. For me, that's the quickest way for me to understand the mind of a character and understand their vibe.
So I'm talking about the craft, Anmol. You know, you've worked with scripts, you've worked with a full-length novel, and we also know that you write short fiction, you know. So this is something that I wanted to ask you. As a writer, which form are you more comfortable with, and why does it, you know, work for you more?
I'm going to definitely be judged for saying this, but for me, they kind of all feel the same, because the central theme for me is always the characters. They're the most important. It's just that the format looks a little different. For example, if I was writing, I think I've written a short story for Bound itself, for your platform Jotted. It's called The Visitor. And the exact same story can be made into a screenplay. It's just that the format would look a little different. The stage directions would be a lot more crisp. I wouldn't be so generous with the description of the setting. But the dialogues wouldn't change. And a lot of my work is very dialogue heavy. I really invest a lot of time in the dialogues because it's the one way I can differentiate between characters. And you'll notice that in Three Impossible Wishes as well. The way Vladimir speaks is very different from the way Arya speaks, is very different from the way Sahil speaks, is very different from all the million characters that are peppering this book. And I think that gives you a very great insight into their vibe, into what they consider important. And it's like the way the three of us are talking right now. This very conversation could be converted into a chapter, or it could be converted into a scene in a movie, but it would be very dialogue heavy. So it's just that the format would change, but the essence would remain the same.
Oh, I mean, we would love to appear in one of your books, Anmol.
I think Tara sort of has, but I'm keeping quiet about it.
I mean, yes, not in a direct way because it's fiction, but yeah, I mean, but it's really inspiring.
Yeah, no, so I mean, that's interesting because, it's more about the story for you. And I like the fact that you work in so many different forms. But coming back to, what you said about dialogue, what is your tips that you would give to writers in order for them to make their dialogue really strong and also differentiate between your characters? Because as you said in your book, each of these characters has a very distinct voice.
So I think one of the tips I had learned very early on, when I was still at school, actually, I don't know why I read a book on how to write. It's the first time I got invested in story writing. But one of the tips that they gave in that book was cover the characters. Like when you're reading a book, you know how it ends with blah, 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 he said, and then blah, 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 she said. They said just cover that little end bit. If all the dialogues end up sounding the same and there's no change of voice in your head, then you've done a poor job with the dialogues. And that line stayed with me. And really good writers, and I don't know if I've managed this, but I know there are great writers out there. You can sense the switch happening in your head. Just try it the next time. Don't think it's a character speaking. Just read all the dialogues in one go and you'll be able to sense the switch. You'll know which is a male voice, which is a female voice, which is a child. It's incredible how great writers manage this.
So, Anmol, since you're mentioning great writers, can you please recommend a few to us? I mean, work that you really admire, especially when it comes to dialogues.
I love the work of Elizabeth Gaskell. I don't know if you've ever picked up any work by her. You must read North and South. Jane Austen does a great job. I think all your classics, it's because it's when a person speaks, you can kind of get a sense of what makes them tick. I think very gifted writers can manage this very easily.
Anmol, by the way, that is the tagline of our podcast. What makes writers
tick? Oh, really?
I just remembered that when you mentioned.
But, away from dialogue, you also go into the heads of these characters. And that's something that in a screenplay, I'm guessing you don't have that liberty to, go inside and actually, show what the character is thinking, because you have to show it through action and you have to show it through dialogue. So how did you make that transition?
Surprisingly, there's a lot of getting into the heads in screenplay writing. It's just that it doesn't show in the draft that you've written, because that's the format of the structure. The format of your screenplay is usually action. Sorry, it's your scene, the time of day, the action, and dialogue. But to get those dialogues to that point, you've had to obviously get into the head of the character, which means there's a lot of work in a screenplay that you don't necessarily get to see. And which is why even when you're writing a Bible for a TV series, you have to have so much written up about the character itself, where they're from, where they're going, what they're thinking. Otherwise, you will not be able to write the dialogues. I lay so much emphasis on dialogues because I feel they tell you a lot about a character, and you can't possibly write dialogues if you don't know your character inside out. So I think that transition wasn't very difficult for me because it's pretty much the same thing. It's like, you remember when you were in school and you would be given a math question for 10 marks, which would say, show all your working. That's what a book is. You have to show all your working.
That reference just brought back some, you know, nightmares to do with math exams and one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. But you know, it's very interesting, Anmol, you know, the kind of work that goes behind, you know, working on films. Because, you know, films is also something that I'm really interested in, especially for their storytelling. You know, especially what I've noticed is I am drawn to movies which are adaptations, you know, based on books. So then you kind of understand the kind of work that goes behind it. You know, what we really loved about the book is, you know, the food that's mentioned, Anmol. And I also know from Tara that you are a foodie yourself. So can you tell us which is your favorite dish? And, you know, maybe Tara can also share hers. Mine, I can tell you, is shawarma, which is really from Bahrain. And I miss that here. I have not found that kind, you know, that authentic shawarma here. So what's your favorite dish, Anmol?
That's like asking a book lover, which is your favorite book? And they'll just say the whole library. So, but I don't know. I think because discussing Three Impossible Wishes and discussing university, and you just said shawarma. So there's something also called a doner kebab, which the chicken doner kebab used to be my favorite. And I'll tell you why. It was made by this one man who used to show up at 4 a.m., which is when the clubs around my university would shut for the night. And I don't like clubbing, but I would be there head of the line at 4 a.m. so I could get chicken doner kebabs. And I think I was judged by every single party goer because they're like, who is this boring person showing up in her pajamas night after night just to eat?
That's such a cute story. I know. I mean, food is the only thing that's keeping me going during the pandemic because my mother, luckily, is the most fantastic cook. So she's been making like Thai food, Chinese food. She made Mexican.
Wow, Tara, my mouth is watering. Don't do that.
I feel bad for her, but I'm enjoying it. But I don't have a favorite food. I think anything Asian. I think dim sums would probably be my favorite food. I like that question, Michelle. I didn't know that your favorite food was.
You know, food has a weird way. You know how smells kind of transport you to a different time and space? I think food has that power as well.
Yeah, definitely. No, it does. Yeah. You know, another thing that we wanted to ask, because we cannot ignore it, is the pandemic. And you released your book during a pandemic. So, you know, can you tell our listeners what was that like and how did you end up, you know, because it's still doing really, really well. And how did you end up marketing it and reaching your audience?
Firstly, I'm immensely grateful that it's HarperCollins that picked up this book, and it still feels absolutely surreal. I'm eternally grateful for that. I think during the pandemic, I did find that I had more time for reading. So perhaps there's a little bit of a silver lining there. And this is such a happy book. So I really hope people do pick it up if they want to kind of escape and smile a little. But I don't know anything about this space. And when it comes to marketing it, I know even less. So I think we've tried everything that we could and worked really hard to get the book a little noticed. And we kind of hope something sticks. Honestly, I don't even know what's working and what isn't. And it has all been a little daunting. But like I said, every piece of art has its own destiny. And I think Three Impossible Wishes is kind of guiding itself. And it has made me meet some amazing people and brought some amazing situations into my life. So I even though it's been scary, I think it's been the best thing that's happened to me so far, launching my debut.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it feels very surreal, Anmol, because, you know, everything happens behind the scenes. You know, we end up writing in our room and, you know, without, you know, people really, you know, looking at the manuscript, and then all of a sudden it's out there. You know, it's the opposite of, you know, the writing process. So I can.
But I think it's weird that I wrote the book to escape into something, and now I'm kind of hoping people pick it up if they want to kind of smile as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure, you know, your readers will experience that and they will smile when they read the book, Anmol. Anmol, we also wanted to ask you, you know, because you clearly have an, you know, a year for music, you know, you have been influenced by music. So did you try to bring that musicality into your writing? Like, you know, make your sentences sing? And is poetry something that you're interested in? Because, you know, when you think of sound, you obviously think of poetry. So we're just curious.
This is such a great question, honestly. Yes, it happens very subconsciously when I'm writing. The sentences have their own kind of rhythm. And sometimes it feels like prose, sometimes it feels like lyrics. And you know what? A lot of the chapters also have been written listening to music. And music plays a very strong role in this book. If it hadn't been for food, I think I would have made Arya a singer. Because there are a lot of mentions in this book to music, such as Tere Bin Dil Nahi Lagta, and there's so many songs that I've mentioned. I think Nora Jones is mentioned in this book. They're all playing in the background. They basically add to the world. When you're picturing the entire scenario playing in your head while you're reading, it adds so much. It adds sound, it adds color. Music is just very important to me. And I think even while writing, it's always there in the background. It always finds its way into the words.
Very interesting.
Oh, that is really interesting, Anmol. I wish we could do a podcast entire episode just on that. And I think it will help. It will help so many writers. I mean, to just learn about world building, you know, and all of these things, because it's very important.
And I think when writers are writing, they're screenplay writers, because when they're writing a book, they have the scene in their head. They're visualizing what eventually you will see on screen.
That's a perspective which, I mean, you really put things in a new perspective. Now we have our rapid fire session. And the first question is the one song you listened to when you wrote the book. Okay, so what does literary success look like to you?
When people quote lines from the book or say that certain sections of the book have really helped them, kind of been imprinted in their minds forever.
Does writing energize or exhaust you?
It does a bit of both. Definitely energizes me, because I feel like I'm creating this little world bit by bit. But at the end of the day, it is a little exhausting because of just how isolating it is.
Have you ever gotten reader's block?
I think so, but I perhaps haven't spent that much time noticing it, because I get very easily distracted by movies and TV series and music, and then the whole cycle just repeats itself. Then I come back to books.
So talking about books, Anmol, what's your favorite underappreciated novel?
There are a lot. I would either say it was Village by the Sea, which is by Anita Desai. I don't know why I feel that a lot of people haven't read this book, and it's written very simply. It's just a very simple story, but it just takes you on this long journey. There's even Salman Rushdie's Harun and the Sea of Stories. I think most people perceive it as a children's book, but I think there is so much more in it than just that. And if you've never read anything by Rushdie before, this would be a great place to start.
I think I'm totally going to do that after this.
What one thing would you give up to become a better writer?
The thing I would probably give up on is my fear of the blank page. It just scares me so much, whether it's a plain piece of paper or it's a brand new Word document. I need to get over this fear, because it just seems very daunting.
Right. No, that's completely relatable. So I have one last one. If you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
I feel I'm still very young when it comes to writing. There's so much to learn. There's so much great talent out there. But I think the advice I would give her is stop filtering out so many thoughts. Just write whatever comes to your head and judge it later.
Anmol, we had an amazing time talking to you. At least I got so many insights, especially about your writing process, and so many reading recommendations. And I had heard so much about you from Tara. And today I really feel really honored to have spoken to you, Anmol. Thanks a lot for taking the time out and for sharing your process with us.
Thank you so much, Anmol.
Thanks for having me on this podcast. It was a lot of fun.
Wow, Tara, that was such a fun conversation. And on our next episode, we will be talking to Sonali Gupta. She is the author of Anxiety. Her book is especially relevant for our times because, you know, we are all dealing with all kinds of issues right now. We are struggling to cope with the pandemic. And her book really gave us insights as to how to deal with it in a better way.
So if you are looking for tips to, you know, deal with stress, or if you are an expert and you want to know how to convert that knowledge into a nonfiction book, do tune in next time. And if you want to explore conversations on mental health, books, writing, and much more.
And as always, we are on at Bound India on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We can't wait to hear from you, and we're looking for your book recommendations, as you know. So tune in next time.